session number 1 is 613, reel 15.
Major Charles Burden Taylor, reel 15. How did life differ as per POW camp from the sort of camps you had before?
I think that probably the difference, because the Italian camp seemed to have been bricks and mortar. We were getting back to the old Moosburg type wooden huts and so on. Frankly, they weren't bad wooden huts. They were warm, shall we say, if you had heating, from a winter point of view. But I think in a way there's perhaps a slight starkness about the change, whether that was just the sort of rather more brusque attitude that you got from the Germans. I must say you felt you knew slightly better how you stood with the Germans as opposed to with the Italians.
In what way?
Well, just in general terms. Well, they, shall we say, called a spade, and didn't waffle around the point, as far as I was concerned, anyway. The only thing that possibly might be comic is that when they carried out their searches, they seemed to decide what they were going to do, that we would search to try and find if there was any hollow noises in the floorboards, in other words, a tunnel underneath. So they'd come round and they'd tap all the floorboards. One fellow was caught out. Somehow the signal didn't get through that they were coming, and he was drawing maps in his room, escape maps. And when they suddenly came in, tapped around the floor, and rather than quickly fill up and sort of try and hide them, he just carried on drawing the maps. But they were on floors today. They weren't looking for maps. They went out, didn't find any hollow noises, and went out. But
how did the German guards treat you overall? Did you see much of them, except on the
surface? Well, we had the usual thing at each corner of the camp and along the side, I think. There were about six towers around the camp. And also patrolling. This was a change, because Italian camps, of course, had this sort of 10, 12, or whatever it was, foot wall. And here you had barbed wire all around the camp. And with patrolling sentries on that area as well.
Would they talk to you?
Oh, no. At least I shouldn't say that, because I gather that there was a certain amount of blackmail went on the basis. Because one thing I hadn't mentioned, incidentally, that as far as I can see, in every camp we ever went to, except possibly in transit, we got a wireless going, so we could pick BBC and get a certain amount of news through.
When did you got your first wireless?
I think we used to get a certain amount at Chieti, but certainly Weinsberg, we got regular news, which was short, you know, very brief, but I think that's the nature of things, that it had
who
to be brief.
Who ran the wireless, and how was it disseminated?
I don't know who ran it, but we are, shall we say, bungalow chiefs. Or a rep in the bungalow would go to a central point and probably somewhere in the open because you never knew when the place was bugged or not bugged and would get a little bit of information. Basically, I don't think it was supposed to be written down, but I seem to remember our chap used to always come with a little bit of paper because it was possibly a bad memory like mine, and then was finally burnt. But in other words, reps got together, and then he just come round.
But did you have any? We mentioned earlier you called the guards goons. Was that in?
Yeah.
That was amongst yourselves.
Oh yes, yeah. Mind if we were talking open, well, we were always talking openly, shall we say, in our rooms, but not talking about escaping. But we weren't worried about talking about goons if we were likely to be overheard, you know, by bugging devices.
Would you try and rib or make fools of the guards as they walked around as a patrol?
No, I don't think anyone ever did that. On the other hand, I remember on one particular occasion we were hauled out onto an extra count, and we thought, oh God, this means another search. And it was in fact a much bigger search. It wasn't a question of one or two of them coming round and just tapping on floors. And having paraded, all of us, the gates opened from the German side, and in marched, in sort of groups of 15 or something like that, a mixture of German police with their, well, funny-looking helmets, and civilians, who we thought could be Gestapo, I don't know. But as soon as ever they marched in, a good old Laurel and Hardy by 1,200 people immediately came in. And as they marched past my particular, the sort of question marks that were shooting up from there, you know, we the dreaded police or we the dreaded Gestapo, what is this funny noise that these prisoners are making? And so from that point of view, we pulled their legs. On that occasion, they were really doing a hefty search, not so much floors or whatever, but they had everybody's locker. We each had a locker, out, clothing, pocket search, and all the rest. In all fairness, they were very good at putting things back, which was, if you like, typical German. I think it would have been the Italians, they would have just left everything on the floor. So in that way, one felt perhaps comfortable, if that's the right word. But one of them stupidly put his haversack wrench, I gather, somewhere, which was promptly pinched. I don't know how that was worked. There was a story went round the camp that one of them had put his pistol on the table and somehow somebody had got their hands on it. Now, how that happened, I don't know. It sounds impossible. But there was a certain amount of hell there, because that could have meant somebody getting shot. I don't mean using the pistol, but by virtue of one of the PWs having a pistol, that would be enough to get him strung up straight away. I think I mentioned earlier on one of the occasions that Bismarck Joe came back. We gave him a right royal reception.
It sounds like the public ribbing of guards was mainly done en masse rather than individual.
That is fair. But I think that there was a certain amount of blackmail of guards, because if we wanted some, we say possibly some wireless equipment, I don't know, but we'd get the guards somewhere along the line to accept cigarettes or some chocolate or something like that, and then a second time, and then we want something and, oh, possibly could not be done. Well, we might have to report the fact that you are accepting chocolate, which I don't think your superiors would agree with. Or
would you be involved in that?
No, I wasn't, no.
Just before we come on to the general subject of escape organisations, did you have the range of activities that you'd had at Chieti? And I'm particularly thinking whether the Germans allowed you things like costumes for your drama,
yep,
and things like that, and whether you had all this range of things that you were up to.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's rather the previous occupants of the camp apparently were French. Now, what happened to them or where they went, I don't know. But we very soon, I mean, to us this was once again a new camp, because we couldn't cart our, you know, all our stage stuff around. And so, really, we're starting afresh. But ultimately, we got music, instruments, set up a theatre. We had another one of these Café Continental things, which we invited. Some of the prisoners didn't agree with this, but we invited the commandant to come and entertain, have his nightclub out with us. And one or two people were annoyed that they got anything of our food to eat. But it's not a bad morale, because we were producing our own food in this direction. And the fact that they could have something really, really tasty from a Canadian Red Cross parcel, as opposed to what they were possibly getting in their own messing, could have been a good point. I don't know. They got real coffee anyway, which was one point. But sport, it was a smaller camp, but we had softball, netball, not netball, soft, what you call it, volleyball, and we're offhand, but other than that, any of the sports that one can do on one's own. And we got a theatre going with no proper proscenium and all
the
rest of it.
Were you doing any stage managing?
I did, I can't remember the show, but I did one or two in Weinsberg, and I also put on a Hampstead Heath in the open air and raised money for the Red Cross. It's all camp money, but we were allowed to remit this camp money ultimately to the Red Cross and made quite a lot for that matter. But this amounted to having sort of Hampstead Heath type stalls round the place. We had a New Zealand bungalow, and they put on a, you know, sort of hobby horse racing and betting set, all with Lagergeld. That was one occasion when I had a little brush with one of the German interpreters, and I stuck my neck out, because the Gatehouse Cafe was in a certain area, and we put on this Gatehouse Cafe with waitresses and that sort of thing, and the limited amount that we could dish out as sort of on payment and so on. And they suddenly said it's too near the wire and it would have to be cut out. And I talked to this Feldwebel, having picked him up as he was wandering through the camp, because like old Croce in Italy, he used to come round as well. And I said that this sort of thing we didn't expect from the Germans. I mean, if we'd been in Italy, we could understand it, because we never knew where we were with the Italians. Those funny people. But having come to Germany, we thought we'd really get fair play. And to having given us permission, and then to deny us it, it was just not what we expected. And we got the order rescinded, and we had our Gatehouse Cafe, with the promise that no one would escape from that point. And we weren't, anyway, attempting escapes at that particular time, for that day. You know, it was quite a big event. Everyone chipped in extremely well. One little the soldier did it as well. One little Cockney corporal saw some what's called hanging on the line, clothing out hanging out after washing, and he was doing one of these things. I've been in this marketplace for 54 years. I'm not asking a quid, and he pinched two of the shirts off, and the owners had to come and buy them back. Anyway, that was just one of the items, but it's an interesting thing that we got our original place for the Gatehouse Cafe.
And what about the educational front? You were
same. Yep.
Did you say they had exams here, or?
I don't know how they worked, frankly, but the thing that brings it to mind, and to each his own, I think one's got to be like that. But my mucker, or our group, if you like, decided to have a tunnel out of our room, and we used to have to ask people for bed boards and that sort of thing, and one or two people we felt it just wasn't on, that they weren't helping, and there were people who, shall we say, came back with perhaps a BA or whatever, or part of that, whilst we were trying to escape, which that is something that just happens to come to mind. And frankly, we rather resented the fact. We didn't mind people, shall we say, literally not giving up their bed boards, but we couldn't help feeling that if everybody else was doing it, then at least that's the least they could do. But no, we've gradually got virtually the same sort of facilities that a lot of it, once again, Red Cross.
So I think we'll turn now to your attempt to escape. How was it planned? Was there an escape committee here, or was it?
Yes, I didn't go to the escape committee. My chief, again, was a major, so he really did all the wheeling and dealing from that point of view.
And it was a room plan, which was taken by the major to the escape committee and approved or otherwise.
That's right. Yep.
Did you ever know anything about the operations of this escape committee other than that it existed? Do you know what its role was in the camp?
Well, the role definitely was to examine any proposals put up and study their chance of success and their relevance, and also to associate them with other people's plans, because we weren't alone in trying to get out, so that one wouldn't have any plans jeopardised. by somebody else's plan. So they didn't want any crossed lines. And that was the basic job of the escape committee, and in consultation with the senior British officer. Because I think that there are times when the SBO must have been having to think, what about the safety either of the individual escapee, or, for that matter, the safety of the camp? I can't think of anything offhand, but I can well imagine it wouldn't be impossible for the Germans to get a little bit knocked if, shall we say, one of their guards was killed, or something like that, that it might reflect on the rest of the camp. I mean, we had Red Cross parcels withheld as a punishment. And there was a threat, too, that they were going to empty, when they discovered we were using tins for air vents in the tunnels, they said, right, well, when you get your parcels, you'll bring your bowl with you, and we just empty every tin. Well, that wouldn't...
Did they actually do that?
The SBO refused to take the parcels, which, is, again, if you like, that was one of the jobs of the senior British officer, to assess the situation and come to a decision. And we, again, stood right behind him, and we weren't getting our Red Cross parcels, but it only went on, I think, for a fortnight or something like that. But even so, everyone's short of food. But no way were we going to have a tin of sardines mixed with a tin of condensed milk. And so he just flatly refused to, and he would take it up with the Geneva Convention people.
Were you told not to use violence in escapes? I mean, was that implicitly understood?
No.
Or would the SBO say...
I'd never heard it mentioned.
Or would you have knocked a guard on the head to get out? Was there a line?
It was never... That wasn't discussed from my point of view. The only thing that I think it was known... that you would get... I mean, escaping, you automatically, I think, got 28 days in the cooler. Right, that's fair enough. That was, and in any case, that 28 days, they used to supply the camp, our side of the camp, used to take the food through. Anyone in the cooler for 28 days would put on a stone at least. You'd probably get double rations. And also, it used to lower the morale of the sentries and the guards, because they would see this... It's a lot of... If it was Red Cross food...
The point about... The point was about the... If you damaged a guard...
Oh, yes. No, if you damaged a guard... Shall we say, normally getting away, you'd get 28 days in the cooler. I would say, if you damaged a car, a guard, you could be getting very nearly on the firing line. In the same way, if you got mixed up with any German women... That was almost, a capital job.
How would you... That just raises slightly another... What opportunity was there to get mixed up with any German women?
None.
But it was seen as a... escaped.
If you were escaped, you could... Actually, our actual room was at the end of one of the bungalows, at the end of the camp, and... outside our window was the dead area, if you like, and then the wire, and then open fields. And there was a path, and I think Sunday afternoon walkers used to go down there. Well, you'd see women down there. But, I mean, you didn't get mixed up with them. Occasionally, they would stop, and they were very quickly moved on, because in this corner of the camp, we had one little fella up on the top with a spandau, or whatever it was.
Now, you got permission for your tunnel, but who would be responsible for providing you with the clothes, any civilian disguise, money or maps? Were they coming...
SELP, as far as I'm concerned, I didn't get any anything through my Red Cross parcels. Sorry, not Red Cross, but the next of kin parcels. But various people did. And I believe there were certain organisations, which presumably were Ministry of Defence or whatever it was then, who would send... I mean, odd people got parcels thinking, oh, I don't know these people. It came from the Reverend somebody at such and such a vicarage. And it would contain something, which would be either a compass or whatever. And that would go through the escape committee. As far as clothing concerned, basically you have to make your own arrangements. As I think I mentioned earlier, I sacrificed a blanket. Because like any of the camps, you always had a specialist somewhere. And we had a tailor. And he produced a very nice sports jacket for me, which was subsequently found, which was annoying, but that's neither here nor there. Otherwise, one had to... Well, you had to make your own arrangements, really.
So what would you do for trousers?
Well, that could be dyed... what do you call them?
Khaki. And documents?
Documents through the escape committee and maps. Or you make your own if you had somebody who could give you something to copy.
Now, how did you go about this tunnel? You were in the ideal position for a tunnel, but surely also the ideal
in the worst position. Yes.
The ideal position for the Germans to guess where you were starting from.
Yeah.
How did you go about selecting the place you started from and starting your tunnel?
Well, it really came from just a suggestion that we ought to start a tunnel. And as you say, from one point of view, we're in the ideal position because we were the nearest to... If we'd gone out the other way, we were in the wrong side of the building anyway, but you were then going uphill into the body of the camp, the German side. So this going out into the open field, which regarded as being quite a reasonable way of doing it, and that's really how it started. Then there was the question of getting together the people who wanted to go, and I think we had about eight who took turns.
How did you conceal the entrance?
If you could imagine the rectangle of... This is a small room, and two bed areas, and a table in the middle, and a stufa stove, you know, and these old-fashioned things, at the end. And what we did was to cut through the floorboards at two lines, and lift the floorboards up and join them together and then put them down. So we had a ready-made right the way through. Very sad. We then found that we had concrete underneath, which is a pity. But first phase one, if you like, was that. And to avoid us being found out by when the sweeping was done, dust would go through. So we had string that we just tucked in and then put dust in so that it looked the same as the rest. And ultimately we got through the concrete. But that was tricky because it was so bloody noisy.
How did you do it? What tools did you have for getting through concrete?
That's a good question because I can't remember that. I'm sorry. But it's amazing what things you could get. And I'm certain we must have had a hammer or... Well, I think certainly we had hammers in the theatre for making scenery and so on. So it may have been that and some iron bar. But
how did you conceal the noise?
That was one other thing. We borrowed, I think there were about three portable gramophones, the old-fashioned doohickeys, and we borrowed that and a couple of records. And I think we must have been very naive because when we were knocking, we played this gramophone, but if the sentry had heard, he must have got sick of whatever the song was, row, 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 way up the river, we'll row, row, row. Because that guy is turning that over at about 20 times an hour.
How thick was it? How long did it take to get through?
I can't really remember that, but if I remember rightly, it's about 3 inches thick. It's annoying because it took time.
Was there a gap between the floor and the concrete?
Yeah. And then there's the question of getting the spoil away. And what we did there, the roof was gable-ended, arched roof. And halfway along the passageway, there was a fan light. And with a bit sort of a framework of barbed wire, so we really couldn't get up through the fan light, but we got that down and could secure it very quickly with loose nails if anybody was coming round. And this is where we needed the floorboards, because we then undid one of the sort of gable wood ends by this fan light, and of course could then get into the eaves to take the spoil away. And we started stacking it up there. But you needed, as I say, you needed floorboards to go the other way. Otherwise, it would have come straight through through the ceiling. And we started saving up food, and...
Where would you hide it?
No, it wasn't a question of buying any. No, you saved...
Hide it.
Oh, hide. Well, what happened, really, we saved up food, and we linked up with the cookhouse, which, again, was on our side of the wire, and run by us, to make up. The mixture was incredible, because it's anything from OXO cubes, anything that you got out of your Red Cross parcel, really. Biscuits, chocolate, oatmeal, OXO, and so on. Anything nourishing. And we made them up into little blocks, rather like the old haversack, not haversack ration, the emergency ration in wartime, which was really a block of high vitamin chocolate. And we hid these in... Each bungalow had a large box, I suppose 3 foot by 2 by 2, full of sand as a fire precaution. So we hid them all at the bottom. We thought they wouldn't interfere with... We were wrong. One of the days, they weren't bashing floors, they weren't looking for maps, they were looking for fire sand boxes. So we lost all that.
I'll come to how the various things were discovered, because I'm quite interested in that. Like, how did you actually do the digging then? You don't remember your tools, but what was the plan of digging then?
Well, the plan of digging was, in fact, I was lucky because I was, in a way, too big, a bit all right to squiggle along to get out, but I was regarded as being too big to get down to actually do the digging. Well, I was very thankful for that. So the smaller people really took the brunt. But it was done in shifts, and it's a question of digging out, carrying it out, pop it up in the eaves, and fixing pipes to get a bit of air through.
Now, these pipes you made from cans?
From cans, from the Red Cross tins. And
you propped it up with...
Again, this is where we wanted the bed boards, because our beds were, shall we say, metal framed, but with wooden cross members. Not like, you know, not sprung or anything like that.
Doesn't that make that a bit difficult to sleep on?
Tricky, yeah, but not impossible. Other than that, I think the other end of it was the question of one had all the way along. From the camp gate, or in sight of the camp gate, because there was only one entrance into the camp, and if anyone came through, then it was a question of blowing nose or scratching one's head or something like that, and that went down from this bungalow to the outside of that bungalow, and then all hell was let loose to get people out and the floorboards down.
So the patrolling guards, you didn't worry about, they had their...
But they were on the other side of the fence. Yep.
And what about the interpreters? Tailed or?
No. If there were anyone, if there was anyone wandering about the camp, we closed up.
So the interpreters were just there on
occasion. Oh, on occasions. Yep. No, it wasn't a full time affair.
So other than that, there were just British or just prisoners in the camp.
Oh yes. Yep. No, basically there was so much to lose. If you could keep it secret, there was a chance of getting out, and therefore there was. To lose it. There was too much to lose, so you didn't take chances from that point of view on its being discovered.